What is up, sports fans? It is another Sunday, so you know what that means. It is time for Sports Odds and Ends. We've been gone for a little bit, where we are here and we are back. I'm King Kaz. I'm joined by my good friend and co-host, as always, the one, the extraordinary, JVZ.
Yeah, thank you, everybody, for sticking with us and taking time away from your weekend watching The Expanse to come listen to us talk about sports. That's a good show. We've got a couple stories for the roundup. One kind of out of the ordinary, the Spelling Bee. I think we talked about last time, the Spelling Bee had an 8-way tie last time. They are trying to cut down on that. Somehow they're going to cut down on that by reducing the number of participants.
Okay. So I don't want to drag this one out, but how does reducing the number of participants reduce the amount of skill that these kids have at spelling, right? Because to me, the problem is that all these kids are exceptional at what they do, which is spelling words. How does cutting down in participants, I guess, mitigate that?
I don't know.
Good answer.
I guess my best guess at it is that they have apparently a bunch of quote unquote wild card entrants, and I think when you add, I guess the more people that they reach out and get in general, the greater the likelihood that you're going to get like a good speller that maybe just made a mistake in one of the earlier competitions, in one of like the feeder competitions. So I think if you just reduce the amount of people that you get from some of those, then the likelihood that you'll get people that are as good as can possibly be is a little bit lower. I think what you're kind of getting at is the fact that like there's only so many words out there to spell, and these kids are hitting the limit of like, I mean, first of all, like all of these kids that are probably at the national competition can probably spell most of these words. Like it's whether you know these words or not, and whether you've studied them, and whether you can handle the pressure. That's like the ultimate differentiator. And so if you go through enough words, at some point there's enough studying and like that, there's just an eventual spot where like all of this concentrates at the end. The end goal is that like 20 kids know how to spell every word in the dictionary, and there's like you can't just make up words after that.
So DJM suggests make it a double elimination like they do at game tournaments. What I would add to that caveat is regional spellings.
Well, no, I mean, that's essentially what happens. I think at least when I participated, I never got close to this far, but I think you started off with like a classroom spelling bee in your English class. In middle school, and then like if you make it out of like if you're like one of the top three, then you go to like your whole school, and then if you're like in the top two for that, then you go to like the whole a regional like district wide competition.
Well, no. When I say regional spelling, I mean. Like, okay, so you give them a word, but you're like, how is this spelled in like the UK version of spelling this word?
Okay. That does make it more interesting because also I think it adds cultural value to it as well, because it's not just how do white people spell this word? It's like how like then it gives you like cultural avenues into like other languages. That I mean, yeah. that's actually the next step after that too. Is like just words in
Please
other languages.
Send your letters to @CurtisLaRock on Twitter.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Moving on from the spelling bee.
I should also add DJM is also a former spelling bee winner. So.
Oh shit. So.
I won my school district once, Lincoln Park, Michigan, in fifth grade.
All right. Shout out to Lincoln Park, Michigan.
All right.
Going from Lincoln Park, Michigan to basketball. What do we got? What are we talking about here other than Dion Waiters being an idiot?
I mean, Dion Waiters is definitely being an idiot. That's basically the story. He's suspended for the third time this season. And like conduct detrimental to the team.
They're not even 20 games into the NBA season, are they?
No.
Yeah, it's like one of these incidents, then fine. But like, how do you rack up three suspensions that quickly? Like, one of them was the whole gummy thing, and I think he was partly suspended because he didn't snitch on whoever gave him the gummy. Like one guy, you know, if you're tripping balls on a plane flight, then, you know, that happens sometimes. Like, maybe you can like write that off, but combined with two other incidents where of unprofessional conduct or, you know, whatever the specifics are. Mm-hmm. Like, the thing is, if you're a semi-decent basketball player, you are useful to have around. Teams will go through like whatever they can to bend the rules to make it so that they don't have to do this kind of shit to you, or to make it so that they don't have to suspend you. But just another suspension. Like, I think this is like 11 or 12 games that you will have missed this year of a 20 game season so far. It just makes you wonder, like, how long are they going to keep him around at this point? Or maybe they just keep him till the end of the year and then just cut him loose.
I think if he keeps going down this path, yes. I think, much like DJM just said, we're less than 20 games into the season. I think he has time to turn it around, but I definitely think it is something where somebody needs to straighten him out. Like, a friend, a good friend, needs to just come up and be like, bro, you are fucking up on epic levels.
You're on the Antonio Brown path right now. And
that is not where you want to be. There is a thing where you could be like, you don't have the clout to kind of carry that kind of attitude, but like, no matter what, like,
yeah, he does it.
But I hate to give anyone a pass for being a dick, but some people do get them. But just in general, you don't got the clout to carry that kind of shit, Dion. So I think we need to relax and start playing the game in senses of you got to be a good boy. You got to fucking listen to the people who are talking to you and you got to show up and do the things that you need to do, because it ain't going to look good for you.
Yeah. And if he's going to relax with gummies, maybe try moderation.
All things in moderation. Speaking of things in moderation, the NBA ratings have been down pretty significantly. I don't think it's significant, but 15% is a sizable number when it comes to viewing games. And much like this article says, everybody has their opinion, and I think I also have one. I don't know about you, JVZ, but
I got like 20 of them. But
how many of them are the Lakers?
That was actually kind of because they were down last year too from the previous year. Like, the previous year it kind of peaked, and then that was also the year that NFL ratings dropped significantly. And then the NFL ratings have since rebounded. But during that year, like, a lot of people, you know, including you and me, were like, oh shit, the NFL is dying and the NBA is, in prime position to take its spot. And, you know, like look at how popular the NBA is now. And things have kind of reversed since then. And so now, like, all of us are kind of scrambling to come up with a good reason so that we don't look like idiots for our takes from a couple of years ago. So last year, like, the Lakers were kind of blamed for it just because it's like, oh, LeBron, like, most of the people in the country are on the eastern half of the country. The mountain time zone is kind of sparse, and then you got the coast where there's a lot of people. But yeah, like, by the time West Coast games are on TV, you know, a lot of the people on the East Coast are just asleep by then. So LeBron moving all the way to the West means fewer people turning down, tuning into games in the East to watch LeBron play. So despite the fact that the Eastern Conference is more wide open and more competitive, the just viewership in general is down because of a big macro effect like that. So that was last year, and then they've continued to slide this year. I think my personal opinion that I've latched onto in this case has been the fact that up until now, I don't think the league has been able to flex games out of the primetime TV slots, and the Warriors are still, for a while, they were still in a lot of those games. And so it just kind of takes time for the league to adjust to, at least from a scheduling perspective, because they can't just yank games week to week. I think now they're just getting around to switching the Warriors out of those games while they're terrible, and putting more competitive games in primetime slots.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing. I think one of the other big things for me, and this has been kind of a weird caveat in, like, when I'm going to the gym right now, because of the time of the season that it is, basketball tends to be on. And there's a basketball game on at least one of the TVs in the gym, right? But then my eyes just generally tend to gravitate towards the TV that is just showing highlights of basketball. And I think Red Zone has ruined me. Like, in just how I kind of want to view sports a little bit. Like, I'd rather just watch a key moment in a game than sit through a whole game, even with basketball at this point. Like, I'd rather be watching multiple basketball games than just one game. And I think for me personally, that's just because I've enjoyed the ability with NFL football, because most of the games are happening at the same time and have some kind of coverage, that they were smart enough to create a channel where I can specifically just watch everything at once.
Yeah. Just everybody that's about to score, you can watch them. But yeah, in basketball, scoring happens all the time.
I think I have kind of a two-pointer on this, a two-parter, that I think goes to two different directions. One, I've always believed that the NFL is king, football is king, football's always going to be king because it's football. I do think that in the last couple of years, conversely, the NFL and the NBA, the NFL has had in the last couple of years a sudden influx of exciting young talent. I think that in the last few years, a lot of the big names in the NFL are starting to get a little older, and they're getting closer to retirement. But the NFL has its great pipeline and has been able to find some newer, younger talent that has caught people's attention, which is really cool and really exciting. It makes football more fun to watch just beyond your own home team, which is really important when your home team is really bad and hasn't won anything in six decades. But that's beside the point. Also, to the NBA, I think And this kind of goes back to my point about not necessarily loving the one and done rule and kind of leaning towards guys staying in college or elsewhere a little longer. I think that the NBA might have a little bit of a marketing problem that we didn't see coming, guys. Yes, the Golden State Warriors were a big thing. Yes, LeBron James is a transcendent guy that the world knows. Yes, Zion Williamson was a sensation, but now he's not playing.
Yeah.
And he's injured. And who out of the most recent class in the NBA draft, aside from like the diehard NBA fans, are people really talking about? Who are they talking about? And I think that's been kind of a problem for the last couple of years with the NBA. We're not seeing these younger guys play the game long enough to really get to know them and care about them and market them and invest in them. And I think that might be a problem. JVZ, what do you think?
I mean, I think you're kind of hitting on something, just the fact that we've kind of hit like an unexpected dead spot. I feel like if you ask this question maybe next year, then we wouldn't say the same thing. Like maybe at that point, Luka Doncic mania is going to, you know, it will have really exploded by then. It's growing this year. I think the NBA is definitely a very player driven league. So if you, you know, with so many stars that are out, like the entire Warriors lineup is pretty much gone, just wiped off the face of the earth. Probably going to return next year, but like for this year, it's wiped off the face of the earth. Like everybody, I think, is still gravitating towards like their local teams because the local teams are a bit more interesting now that things are more competitive. It's as far as national talent, it's like, you know, like we talked a lot about the Bucks last year and their emergence as a contender in the East, and they're kind of doing the same thing this year, but we're just talking about them less because they're kind of just there at this point. And the Raptors, the fact that they won the championship, lost Kawhi Leonard, and they're still playing at a championship level, like that should be a big story, but it's kind of not because they're kind of just there.
Because they're a team and they don't have one star player for people to talk about.
And yeah, and despite the fact like they've managed to fill that gap, that void that Kawhi Leonard left, because the players they did have all improved, but none of them have, you know, like they've improved enough to fill that gap, but none of them individually have improved enough so that they can become a transcendent superstar across the entire league. So, Milwaukee does, the Bucks do have that with Giannis, but he made that leap a couple of years ago. So now Giannis doing Giannis things is just not that interesting anymore. And it kind of is, some of it is like a short attention span thing, which I think you're kind of alluding to with the red zone stuff. But at the same time, like, I don't know if that stopped people before. Like the NBA is still like the shortest attention span thing actually helps the NBA when it comes to marketing on Twitter. Like I feel like more people, and I don't have any like scientific facts or anything to back this up, but it feels like NBA Twitter is more engaging than it has ever been before, which is great. But like, how do you turn that into dollars? How do you get people to tune into games? And how do you do that when so much of the league's revenue coming in is tied to an old dinosaur system like cable TV? It used to be that NBA games were on broadcast TV all the time. Like you'd get NBA on NBC games, you know, this early into the season, you'd get them every Sunday. But now, like all of the all of the league's marquee matchups early on in the season are on cable TV. They're on TNT, they're on ESPN, and more people are cutting cable. So that pipeline is just getting cut off there. And it doesn't matter that young people like the NBA. Young people aren't watching TV.
Yeah, but
that's
a
bigger force than.
Have they also been doing the streaming stuff? Because I know NFL has.
They've started with the G League.
Yes. Okay. And they've been getting more creative with their packages for NBA League Pass, but all that still has some dinosaur stuff within it. Like, there's still blackouts, there's still like all of that bullshit that you have to deal with. So it's like, if you want to watch your local team, you know, you live 5 minutes away from the stadium, but you can't go to the game, and then the game's blacked out because you're within the territory and you didn't buy a cable subscription. So it's still bullshit like that. And because I hate stuff like that, I want to put that as like the number one reason why the NBA is struggling. And I want to say, like, until they fix that, like, as soon as they fix that, I think there's going to be a huge spike.
Before we go to the next story, JVZ, let me ask you, what is the main story of the NBA right now in this season? What is the main story?
I do think it's the Lakers and the fact that they're just a big juggernaut that hasn't lost very many games. Like, I think they're exceeding their own expectations at this point. So I think, you know, LeBron and the Lakers and how well he's been able to gel with Anthony Davis so quickly is probably the biggest story.
All right. Take it from the West Coast, go to the East Coast.
The Knicks suck. That's probably a big factor. And they fired their head coach, David Fizdale. So that's
yeah, because that matters.
Right. And I feel like that sentiment is coming a lot from like all, not just Kaz, but like all the Knicks people that I follow on Twitter. It's just like, this isn't going to change anything.
Our boy Stephen A. Cooper.
Yeah. Ownership is still the same. Until James Dolan sells the team, it's going to keep being like this, and they can just keep shuffling coaches in and out, and none of it is really going to be all that notable. I will say the Kings lost to the Knicks on Friday, and that...
Sorry for your loss.
That was very, very embarrassing to be in the building to watch that. I had all these jokes that I wanted to throw out, and like, now I can't say anything because my team lost to the Knicks. They've also beaten the Mavs twice, which is weird. So the Knicks, as bad as they are against the Eastern Conference, I think they're like they've won 4 out of 5 games against the West, which is especially weird. Maybe just being away from the New York media helps them. And the further away they get, the more comfortable they are playing.
Maybe. I don't know.
From what I saw during that game, they weren't good. It's just
no, the they're not. First. They're fucking like, garbage. They're straight hot garbage. They're garbage.
I think just at this point, their best strategy is to continue to be garbage. And then some teams will come into games just not ready and playing more garbage. Like that's what happened.
That is a problem. That is not the problem. Like the problem. And I tried very long to not jump on this bandwagon, but the problem is our ownership. The Knicks ownership has no clue what the fuck they want to do with that team. Like, yeah, no, it is turning into how you feel with the Lions, DJM. It is essentially turning into that. Like, and I think all of New York is starting to feel that way. And it is trickled down to my the depths of my soul that I am starting to feel like these people are
critical out to question get for me. You.
All right.
Do you think David Fizdale made a difference either way with the team as a coach? Do you think he made a difference?
I think like many of these situations, he was a guy who probably could have done something if he wasn't so handcuffed, right? He came into a situation where he's given very little power, probably micromanaged and really not allowed to do much of anything, if anything. And because of that, there's just nothing he can do, right? He doesn't get to show his prowess at, he doesn't get to show what he can do as a coach because he's not allowed to do that. He has to play by the book that was given to him and do the things that are in there. And there's nothing in there. It's actually literally just blank pages that says, don't fuck up.
The player acquisition strategy for the Knicks the last couple of years has been suck so bad that you get a good draft pick and clear out the team so that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving can come play for us. And then they went to the team in Brooklyn instead. And the Knicks' response to that was to sign every power forward on the open market. So that's the way their team is assembled right now. That's what David Fizdale had to work with. And towards the end, it seemed like he was coaching so that he could get fired. And
guys, I'm going to throw this out there. Here is my NBA prediction for 2020. Kaz, this one is dedicated to you. Andre Drummond for the Detroit Pistons. He's heading to the Mecca. That's my prediction. He's in a contract year. He's got a contract coming up. And I would not be surprised if he goes to the Knicks. That's my prediction.
So I'm gonna say this right. That sounds great, but I still believe that in the current iteration of the Knicks with ownership in tow, all that leads to is another pretty good, damn good player ending up on the outs of the NBA because he went to New York,
which is. To tie this back into this ratings thing, it's like they released that Forbes list of like the most valuable sports organizations every year. And in the NBA, the Knicks are always at the top of that. They're valued at like $4 billion. It's like how much of the NBA ratings being down is how much of that is just so many people in the New York market just deciding that, you know what, I don't feel like watching basketball right now. I don't feel like watching this Knicks team play, you know, night in, night out, and just watching this suck fest over and over again. Like, I feel like a healthy New York Knicks market, and then on top of that, a healthy rivalry between the Nets and the Knicks would bring in so many more people. You know, like that, the LA market is back, you know, this year.
This is what I say for next year. We talked about during a prediction show. This is already my prediction for the next. If they don't go after Drummond, right? Because like DJM had is coming up on a free agent year. He's from the New York area, right? That hometown boy. That's number one. If you don't go for DeMar DeRozan, who will be possibly a free agent, or Gordon Hayward, then I don't care. I am with the Knicks for 2020 already. If I don't see at least one report where it's like, oh, the Knicks are talking to any of those three people that I named, I'm washing my hands of it.
And does it matter what kind of pick they get in the draft? Doesn't matter any of that.
No, I want to go for legitimate players that can build into a legitimate team that will compete at least in 2021, if not in 2020.
If they get the number one overall pick, Kaz, if they get the number one overall pick, how would you feel?
I'd have to go look at who's coming out because I haven't heard any names. Like, I haven't heard any.
Do you want to tell him, JVZ? Do you want to tell him?
I mean, other than James Wiseman, I haven't heard very many names either.
Is LaMelo 2020 or 2021?
Oh, I have heard that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But yeah, what if you end up with a ball? What if you end up with LaMelo Ball, Cats?
They're saying LaMelo could go number one, Cats. No, like, for real.
I can't, dude. I can't. All right. You know what? I'm already done. Moving on.
On a more serious note, it appears at least Becky Hammon has thrown her name into the ring for the Knicks coaching job. That's a job where it's like, if you're an experienced head coach, like, you stay away from that job. You don't need that noise in your life. But if you've never had a head coaching job before, at this point, nobody's going to blame you for anything that goes wrong after you take that job. So if you're a new candidate and you want the interview experience and you want the actual coaching experience, that might be a good place to start. Or it might ruin you forever.
Yeah, no, that's what everyone has said to her. Everyone has said, don't do it. Please. Yeah.
She's Greg Popovich's lead assistant right now. Mm-hmm. He actually got some coaching experience after Pop got kicked out of a game. She's coached a summer league team to the summer league championship. She's ready for another opportunity to take a step up. So,
holy shit. You know who said the smartest thing in the world? Fucking Charles Barkley. He was like, you take that job, that's setting yourself up for failure. And then that's setting you up for putting something on you that is just marked as failure. Like, fucking Charles Barkley.
I think everybody would give the next coach a second chance. Like, nobody will have to shoulder all that blame. Like, David Fizdale is going to get another chance.
So here's the problem with that. And I think it circles back into, like, just dumb bullshit. I think some people would look at that and they'd be like, oh, you know, she couldn't do that job, even though it's already noted as a job that can't be done because of other factors. You know what I mean? It's like, don't take a job where it gives people a reason to just not take you seriously.
Yeah, I feel like if they're going to hire her, they got to clear out, like, the front office first. And
not happens.
Like, even though the owner is not going to sell the team, but, like, at least clear out the talent acquisition department, get a new general manager in. And if they want to bring in whoever they want to bring in, then fine. But you got to clear house first, because what you've been doing for the last couple of years, this strategy of just hope a superstar decides to come play in New York is not going to work. Because right now this team is a negative right now. And, everybody wants to avoid this team and go elsewhere.
All right, let's talk a little bit about golf. Talk about the President's Cup. What is happening there, JVZ?
Yeah, the U.S. won the President's Cup, which is nice. I think since Tiger Woods has taken over the team, I think they're like, they've done pretty well, So the President's Cup is like the international competition cup.
Okay.
I never
knew that until I started reading this story. Like, I've known of the President's Cup. I just never actually knew what it meant and was in, like, the soccer mythos. I mean, not the golf mythos.
It's like the U.S. versus just all the other international golfers. And it's team play and there's like individual matchups between like one American golfer and one international golfer. And then I think there's a couple other side competitions along with that. And then collectively, one of the two regions will win out. And in this case, the U.S. won that. That's not the most interesting part of the story, at least for me. For us at Sports Odds and Ends, Patrick Reed's caddy got suspended from the event because he got into an altercation with a fan, supposedly punched a fan at a golf tournament, which is not something you usually expect to happen. But Patrick Reed has been heckled this week because of a cheating scandal from last week, which I think was just kind of like a mistake that kind of got amplified. He's been heckled a lot this week. And then, and then his caddy took that personally and went after a very specific fan for that. I think the President's Cup, from what I'm reading, is like a generally a rowdier event than most golf tournaments, which I would like to see that a little bit more in golf. Like, I would like to see just louder, rowdier, like, don't get quiet when they're about to swing. Just like make a shit ton of noise. Golf and tennis, I think, could use that. But maybe I'm just imposing my own thing on a tradition that has existed for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It doesn't tend to go this way in soccer in general. So it's interesting to see. I mean, I'm stuck on soccer right now. But yeah, it's just interesting to see that level of rowdiness, because that is something you tend to see in soccer.
That's why. That's pretty much it. Let's move on to baseball. We got a whole slew of baseball stories here. Starting with one that just broke, with the Major League Baseball kind of firing shots across the bow for Minor League Baseball. Well, I guess they've been firing shots for the last couple weeks, but this was a big shot where Major League Baseball has actually, where Rob Manfred issued a statement, or I guess the whole league issued a statement saying that if Minor League Baseball, right now, like, Minor League Baseball is kind of taking to the media with their shots, and Major League Baseball is saying that, like, hey, we need to be negotiating about these things instead. And if you're not going to do it at the negotiating table, then we'll just go take our ball and go home. And we will start doing player development with other teams instead of these minor league teams that have existed for a long time. So the way people are interpreting this is that, like, this is like they are fundamentally walking away from minor league baseball at this point, which is kind of hard to imagine, just because minor league baseball as an institution has been so ingrained with major league baseball for a long time. But they are two independent entities, and they could walk away from each other at any point, or at least once contracts expire. It's kind of hard to imagine Major League Baseball deciding, okay, like, all you minor league teams, we're going to ignore you guys, and we're going to start our own developmental teams, and then do all the player development there, just start all that from scratch, and the rest of you minor league baseball teams, you're going to be left to struggle all by yourselves. And yeah, without any major league talent coming in, and these negotiations from what seems like parent teams and child teams, they're not that intertwined, to the point where Major League Baseball can just make Minor League Baseball do whatever it wants. It's a combative relationship. It's an adversarial relationship. There's a tug of war going on, and it's getting nasty enough that one side is already threatening to just cut ties altogether.
it's interesting in the fact that it's gone this far.
Yeah, Congress is getting involved. That's how far it's getting. It's drawing the attention of people like Bernie Sanders I think Congress initially got interested during the initial proposal that like, oh, that we're going to get rid of like 40 minor league baseball teams or so. But you know, now that the talk is getting to the point where it's like, we're just going to get rid of all minor league teams, or at least break off whatever agreements we have with them. It's, you know, now it's getting nasty. And,
So then in that sense, what do they do for player development, right? Because it's the whole
they'll point likely just system. Look at the independent leagues, and they'll just do their international thing the way they've been doing it with Japan and Latin America and now Korea and Taiwan. They'll just say all of those old school AA, AAA teams, you're gone, out the window, and just develop their own systems internationally more than likely.
Yeah, or
because a lot of these teams already have international scouts that travel and go places, and they have developmental systems in places like the Dominican and Venezuela. So there's already sort of a foundation of a pipeline there. If minor league baseball was eliminated, that just makes the pipeline more solid.
So how would this affect like the draft? Because the draft is like a multi-day thing. There's like 30 fucking rounds. By the end of the draft, you don't know who the fuck these guys are.
Well, a lot of the draft is college. A lot of the MLB amateur draft is college. College won't change anything. It might even involve some guys staying in college longer. That'd probably be the main difference if there's no minor league system or if there's no A-ball. Or teams might negotiate with various teams, minor league or affiliates individually. I don't know. But as far as the draft goes, it would strictly be, say, your team drafts a player from Old Dominion in the first round. That player might stay at Old Dominion for another year or two, and then you can decide what you want to do with them. Or they might come out right away, and then you'll sign them, and then if you've worked out a developmental system, they'll be there. But this would really, it's more about how Major League Baseball had to fundamentally redo its entire system as far as how big you can keep your rosters, where you can stash players. It would be a reshaping of the entire system.
And then there'd basically be all these minor league teams that are kind of left in the lurch without, I mean, I guess they could still keep playing. And they would still have players on the rosters, but then like all the players that are assigned to the major league team would kind of get called back.
The question is, where would they go?
That's
the question. Where would they go?
Yeah. And so like it seems like there would be like this mass culling of like, okay, is some of these developmental guys, like there's just no promise with these guys, so we'll just like let them go, and then they'll float around. I guess the minor leagues would turn into their own independent leagues. It's just the major league teams would not have control over specific players within these leagues anymore, I guess, unless they work out an individual development agreement. So potentially things, they could break off those ties, but if the teams don't break the individual ties that they have, things could end up kind of staying just the same, or they could drastically change. Like it's a very wide thing, and I would expect that this is just like it's just a big threat being thrown around just for the sake of negotiation. But you know, sometimes whenever there's big threats being thrown around, there's big changes that will follow. We'll have to wait and see what kind of effect this has on these negotiations that I think at the end of 2020, that's when the current agreement expires. And so that's when the major league system wants to cut like 42 of these teams out. We'll have to wait and see. But at least this year, we haven't had to wait that long to see the big free agent signings like we did last year, where it was basically all the way until March before some of the big free agent names finally signed. I think we're getting there a little bit early, a lot early, actually. Three big contracts have been signed over the past week. Anthony Rendon from the Nationals is now a Los Angeles Angel, signed for 7 years, $245 million. Steven Strasburg, the World Series MVP with the Nationals, has re-signed, 7 years, $245 million for him as well. And Garrett Cole, probably the marquee pitching free agent signing of the offseason, goes from the Astros to the Yankees for 9 years, $324 million. So these are all massive contracts, all these negotiated by Scott Boras, who DGM and I were talking about before the show, is kind of this super agent in baseball. If you look at like a who's who list of like the biggest baseball contracts, Scott Boras's name is all over those contracts. There's a Market Watch article here that's talking about how like he might actually make more in commissions this year than some major league baseball players, than like a lot of the top major league baseball players. So that's how kind of ingrained that this particular agent is with baseball and baseball teams and upper echelon baseball players.
So to drag it to a different thing, but are we finally forgiving Major League Baseball for not spending money for 2 years because they've spent money in the last 2 years?
I don't know. A part of me wants to say this doesn't even count as spending because, okay, the Yankees finally shelled out a bunch of money for Garrett Cole. And then I looked at how this affects their salary cap / luxury tax. And this means they owe $2 million in luxury tax money.
Right.
And that's like nothing.
So for those who may not remember, some shows back, we were probably, I think it was at maybe the start of this season or the start of last season, we were talking about how Major League Baseball was not spending money. And then we after a while, we got a couple of contracts that weren't really worth talking about. And then we got a few big contracts for a few players, and then now we have these. And I think I agree with you, VZ, where it's like this in total is maybe what, 7 or 8 big contracts across Major League Baseball, and it just does not seem significant enough with the amount of money that we know is floating around in baseball, and like you said, for all the money, which if you break it down, it's not that much. The Yankees are paying $2 million.
Yeah, I mean, so and I got that number wrong. It's more like $7.5 million. So okay, maybe I can forgive the Yankees. Oh, okay. but it's like if you look at the two teams that are above the luxury tax threshold, that's the Yankees and the Red Sox, and that's it. The Yankees payroll in 2020 will be $245 million. The Red Sox will be $220. The Astros will be $200. And then if you look all the way at the bottom, the Miami Marlins are at $33 million. And
the Marlins up there doing the Lord's work.
and the Orioles are at $43 million. The Rays are at $50 million. So that is a huge gap.
Yeah.
You know, like $150 million gap between the third place spending team and the 28th. And until the collective bargaining agreement includes a salary floor, I'm not willing to give Major League Baseball any credit for paying its players. Like you said, with the amount of money that these teams make, this is still unacceptable to me. And yeah, like you could argue tanking and all that for competitive reasons, but
I mean, but we came off of something that seemed like a quiet deal for everyone to not spend money it in a certain year. You know what I mean? Like it seemed like everyone had decided at the same time to not spend money that year.
Yeah, and so yeah, maybe I'm willing to forgive to the point where I'm willing to accept that there is no collusion. That's if that's what you're asking, sure. And just because that's essentially really hard to do anyways. But yeah, like we got the big market spending again. Okay. When you got teams like, okay, there are NBA players that are making more money this year than the entire Miami Marlins team is making. So that on its own is unacceptable. From just an overall perspective of how healthy the league is, that sends the message that you are not valuing these players enough. And
so DJM just handed me this this listing of the New York Yankees payroll.
Yeah,
and looking at this, right, Gerrit Cole is 14% of their payroll. And then it significantly just trickles down from there.
Yeah, Giancarlo Stanton's at 10%, making $26 million. Masahiro Tanaka, $23 million. Aroldis Chapman, their closer, at 17. And then, yeah, it's... this is more along the lines of what I would expect from the Yankees. And then Aaron Judge... At 28 years of age, making $6.4 million is low, but I think once they, once he breaches his first contract, his first big contract, that'll go up significantly. They're spending at the level that I would expect the Yankees to spend, like the team that always gets accused of outspending everybody is now trying to outspend everybody again. I'm waiting for the Dodgers to get back into the mix with this kind of stuff. All the top teams in payroll this year, the Yankees, Red Sox, Astros, Cubs, Mets, Dodgers, like those are big markets. Those are the four or five, maybe not Boston, but the four or five biggest cities in the United States, and then the markets with a rich baseball history. But what about the rest of them? Because not everybody can play for those teams. There's only so many positions to go around, and how healthy is the league? Is the league really when some of your teams are only willing to spend less than what the Brooklyn Nets are willing to pay Kevin Durant to sit on the bench for an entire year?
I'm gonna let that one go because it almost made me yell about the Knicks again. Let's talk about drug testing in the major leagues. So the major leagues has decided to look at some of its drug testing and add and take away some things. So one of the big things that they've added is drug testing for opioids and providing treatment for opioids for players. which I think is a relatively big thing, being that in the U.S. we have seen a spike in opioid overdoses and deaths. So this is kind of weirdly the MLB taking a stance to try to provide some help and benefit to the possibility of some of its players being on opioids and maybe the possibility of players overdosing on opioids after a player has happened to a player.
Yeah, Tyler Skaggs, the Angels pitcher from last year, was found dead in his hotel room. I think I don't remember if he was scheduled to pitch that day or not, but yeah, they found fentanyl, oxycodone, and alcohol in his system at the time of his death. It's not necessarily weird that they would respond to that particular incident. It is weird for them to take that initiative on their own, but at least they're seeing that this is a serious situation if players are dying from this. So, I guess it's nice to see them move from kind of the punitive stance towards those things to like a more treatment based thing. Instead of like immediately getting suspended when somebody tests positive for these things, they're going to try to funnel them towards treatment programs to get them off of these drugs and hopefully into a state where they're clean and healthy. A lot of these are being used as painkillers for injury management. The pain is caused by them playing the sport. So yeah. Eventually, if you trace the blame back far enough, if you want to do that, like then eventually the blame falls on this is a sport and it is athletic activity. And this is, something caused by the nature of the job. So it's good to see baseball taking responsibility for this. They're also relaxing, or they're just going to stop drug testing for marijuana. Guess they hadn't been doing that for the major leagues for a while now, but now they're definitely not going to do that for the minors, which does affect major league players when they are rehabbing from injuries, or players that eventually hope to make it to the major leagues. So it's weird that they even had that inconsistent policy in the first place. Some people smoke marijuana as a, to help with the pain. So this is just, giving the okay to an alternative, so that hopefully players don't end up addicted to painkillers and then dying like Tyler Skaggs did. That's a reasonable approach, and I hope that this is like a ripple effect for other sports leagues as well. On the other side of drugs, we've got Russia getting completely banned from international competition for doping. If this sounds familiar, that's because they got banned from the 2018 Winter Olympics for the same reason, and then all the Russian athletes that were competing in individual sports had to compete as Olympic athletes from Russia, and then fly the Olympic flag instead. Basically Russia was kind of under a microscope after that, and they continued to conduct shady business. They didn't cooperate with the investigation. Some of the stuff that they submitted as part of the investigation was tampered with. The International Olympic Committee, the World Anti-Doping Association, and all the organizations involved in international play just don't trust Russia anymore. So this ban is going to last for 4 years, It applies to the 2020 Tokyo Olympics, the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics, and and the 2022 Men's World Cup. I guess, I would include the 2023 Women's World Cup with that, but I don't think they qualified for the last one. So I don't know if they're missing out there. But that's a lot of competitions where, like, Russia, one of the largest countries in the world, and definitely one of the largest medal winners when it comes to each of these Olympic events. Now their name kind of just gets wiped off the stage, and because of drug abuse and performance enhancing shady practices.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just one of those things where I kind of expect this from Russia. I expect them to do weird, shady things, but I think it's part of it because of the movies I grew up watching when I was a kid, and very namely Rocky.
Rocky IV, yeah. Where you actually saw Von Drago getting injected with needles. Yeah.
Yeah. DJM says also, Russia. I don't know. It's just kind of this weird thing that I kind of think of Russia as that place that will just do these kind of things. So
it's more surprising that they got caught. That's the surprising
thing.
At the international level, that's not as surprising. Just the fact that they were like bribing the people that were supposed to be overseeing this stuff internally, that's not surprising to me. It makes me wonder, like, how did they expect to actually get away with some of this stuff on the international scale?
Because it's Russia.
Fair. I do hate to fall back into those old stereotypes, but the country itself is not helping right now. So that's just Russia in sports. Speaking of more weird administrative stuff, couple weeks ago, James Harden dunked a ball, and then the laws of physics somehow worked in strange ways to where the net grabbed onto the ball and swung it back over the basket and just flung it out. But that ball went through the hoop but it looked so weird live and in real time that a lot of people thought he missed it. Even James Harden reacted like he missed it. The announcers said, "Oh man, he missed it." And the referees didn't count those 2 points in, I think it was a game against the Spurs. This happened with seven minutes and 50 seconds remaining in the fourth quarter. And the Rockets had a massive lead at the time. The ruling on the court was that the dunk didn't count, even though they totally could have reviewed it. And they chose not to because they took so long to actually figure out what happened that the review, the 30 second challenge period expired. And then this game ended up going into overtime. The Rockets squandered the lead they had over the next 7 minutes and 50 seconds. And then the game went to overtime and the Rockets eventually lost in overtime. So they protested this. Fundamentally, they argued that had they had those 2 points, this game would not have gone to overtime. And then the league finally ruled on that last week and denied that protest and said that that dunk should have counted. The replay rules were misapplied by the officials, but tough shit, basically. the logic being that they had sufficient amount of time to overcome the referee's mistakes. This happened 7 minutes and this didn't happen at the end of the game. This happened 7 minutes and 50 seconds. Basically acknowledging the fact that the Rockets blew the lead that they did have, And then, you know, also acknowledging that, yeah, referee errors happen sometimes and everybody kind of just has to deal with it. What the Rockets wanted was, I think what they would have really wanted was to like just get the win awarded to them, which was not going to happen. And then the other alternative solution would be to replay the remaining 7 minutes and 50 seconds left in the game. And the NBA wasn't having that at this point. They basically just acknowledged that it would be more work to have to replay that seven to gather these two teams back together, probably the next time they play each other, and have them play another 7 minutes and 50 seconds, risk injury to all these guys. You know, just because this one thing didn't count when the Rockets had plenty of time to adjust to this mistake, which I think, I mean, it's a fair and reasonable ruling, I think. What do you think?
No, I agree. I do definitely believe that, like, you had more than enough time to figure that out and do something, right? Like, you had enough game time to actually do something about it. Like, that is a mishap, but, and I definitely agree that the referees missed it, but yeah, you had more than enough time to not fuck up your lead.
Yeah, and so the last time the NBA actually had to replay time was, I think, a situation where Shaq should have fouled out, and I think there were like two minutes or so left, and he should have fouled out, and then, like he received a foul, the refs called the foul, but they didn't realize that he was that was his sixth foul, and. So like they never kicked him out of the game or something like that along that nature, where like he was able to continue playing the rest of the game. So because he was in the game when he shouldn't have been, and this happened for the rest of the game, they chose to replay that because the mistake had an effect on the rest of the game, where in this case, it was just a momentary event. You could argue, even though there was a momentum swing and all that, this missed dunk only was a single isolated play. So the only effect it had on the game was 2 points, and that's it. And even though those 2 points ended up affecting the final score, they had plenty of time to make sure it didn't affect the final score.
I agree. Last but not least, our boy, your boy, someone's boy, someone's friend, Chris Paul. This one can go either way. Either this is the most highest IQ play that has ever existed, or this is Chris Paul at his most Chris Paul. So Chris Paul snitches on Jordan Bell for having an untucked jersey, getting a delay of game call, which may have helped his team get back in it enough to take over the game.
Yeah, so the rule is that you have to have your jersey tucked in when you enter the game. Jordan Bell, this was a game between the Thunder and the Timberwolves. 1.1 seconds left in the game. Karl Anthony Towns for the Wolves stepping to the free throw line. His team is up 2 points. And he's got two free throws. Towns missed the first shot, and then generally in between the first and second shot, that's when a bunch of subs come in. So the Timberwolves subbed in Jordan Bell. Again, they're still up 2 points, and Towns is about to take his last free throw. Chris Paul pointed out that Bell didn't have his jersey tucked. So that's a delay game penalty whenever that happens. If the team, when the first delay game penalty happens, that's just a warning. That's like, hey, knock that shit off. You're slowing the game down. That's usually reserved for like somebody, you know, somebody scores a basket and then slaps the ball out of bounds. And then somebody's got to go get that ball or something. You know, it's reserved for stuff like that. A timeout is ended and teams don't come back from the bench in time. onto the court. Like that's delay game stuff. It's not a big deal, which is why you get a warning the first time. But it's a technical foul every time after that during the game. The Wolves already used up their warning. Chris Paul knew that. And then he snitched on Jordan Bell. And because that was a second delay game penalty, that was a technical foul. Oklahoma City got a free throw and they made that free throw. So now the lead is just 1 point. And with 1.1 seconds left in the game. And then Towns went up and shot the free throw. He should have missed the free throw because they only had 1.1 seconds to run the ball all the way down the court and take a shot. But he made it instead. And because he made it, then the Thunder had a chance to actually run a play from out of bounds. And Steven Adams threw a full court pass all the way to Dennis Schroeder, who made a layup and sent the game into overtime. So a lot of stuff happened there, but this was all started by Chris Paul snitching on Jordan Bell for having an untucked jersey.
Yeah.
That made it so that the margin was only 1 point, which then became 2 points after Towns made his free throw. Otherwise, had Towns just made both free throws from the get-go, it would have been a 4 point gap, which is pretty much insurmountable unless you get fouled while shooting a 3-pointer. After he missed the first one, that still would have been 3 points, which would have required a really tough heave from all the way across the court, which would have been 3 points. But because Chris Paul was smart and snitched, that became just a 1 point margin, which then became two. So it's then. Yeah, that led to overtime, and then the Thunder won in overtime. So, DGM rules that it is both a high IQ play and a dick move. What is your ruling on that?
I looked at it a few times, and initially I was like, God, it's just Chris Paul being his most Chris Paul. But then after really thinking about it and realizing you're going to get shots, if he held on to that notion that he's like, oh, wait, this is their second delay, we get shots, fuck yeah, then I got to give it to him. That's high IQ shit right there. Like, to find a way to literally put the ball in your team's hands.
Yep. And, I mean, they got the win out of it. So,
yeah.
But that kind of amplifies it on both fronts, that like you won because of a dick move, but it was a smart dick move.
Yeah. So
I'm going to side with DJM on this and say it's both. So 2 out of 3 of us say it's a dick move. It's a dick move.
It's a dick move.
Okay. It's definitely unanimous. A dick
move. Yeah.
But it's also a smart. We are unanimously agreed on that. It is. Certainly,
you found a way to put the ball in your team's hands, literally.
Yeah, and found a way to win. And honestly, Chris Paul, he's got this team playing okay. They're like on the brink of the playoffs when we all thought that they would just suck ass this year and that Chris Paul was just going to phone it in. But no, he's still going out there making an effort. He's still doing weird shit like this to help his team win games. So I got to give him credit for that. Like he, after getting traded away from a pretty good situation in Houston, being the sacrificial lamb for that, if he wanted to just pack up his bags and go home, I wouldn't blame him too much. I would blame him a little bit, but
I'm not saying anything. But I'm just saying those Bucks, though. Just that's all. That's all.
Okay. Okay, just keep them as part of the discussion. Keep them in.
The Bucks.
Yeah, they're doing well. The whole NBA this year is a lot more competitive, and that's why it sucks that ratings are down because more people should be watching. Because
especially if you're a Knicks fan and the Knicks suck, the Bucks. That's all I'm gonna say. No. Not pick a new team. I'm just saying there are teams that are exciting to watch, and the Bucks might be one of them. All right. With that being said, that brings us to the end of another fine episode of Sports Odds and Ends. Be sure to go over to the website sportsoddsandends.com to see links to all the stories that we talked about on today's show, as well as follow the show. Go ahead and subscribe if you have not done so already. It would be greatly appreciated. If you have been enjoying the show and are continuing to do so and would like to possibly show some support, you can go on over to patreon.com/sportsoddsandends to follow and support the show. Also, as of this show, the show has its own Twitter account, twitter.com/sportsoddsandends. Go on over there, check us out. You'll just kind of see updates about the show, maybe some memes, maybe some updates on the seasons of the sports that we're following, all kinds of things. Thank you. I'm at King Kaz on Twitter. JVZ is at JVZ. DJM is calling me DJM. This has been Sports Odds and Ends. Have a good day.